and the people, in the government, Congress, senators, even presidents, mayor, sheriff, yours to pick. 2 years, 4 years, maybe six. Rock the roll and voice your choice. It's a simple process. Use your voice. Rock the roll. There's no doubt. Use your voice.
This hour of our program, we're going to be talking about young voters, and our guest is the author of Youth to Power, How Today's Young Voters Are Building Tomorrow's Progressive Majority. Michael Connery is our guest, a political junkie and an accidental activist, he said, who became involved in politics during the early days of the Dean campaign. He's founder of Music for America and served as its communications director and web editor for a couple of years. He's a fellow with the Center for Independent Media and blogs full-time about progressive youth politics at Future Majority. He's also a weekend front-page writer on MyDD.com. And he's a contributor to TechPresident.com. The book looks at, well, it looks at the history of the youth vote in this country, which is fascinating, but it also looks at how this 5-year shift and how young voters relate to both the Democratic Party and the progressive movement as a whole. How did it come about? Who were some of the activists, the insiders, the social entrepreneurs who reshaped what it means to be involved in progressive politics? We're going to be welcoming phone calls from Michael, as we always do. And I'm particularly interested in hearing from those of you who, I mean, I'm old, but I consider myself young in some ways. But so those of you who are young, who are new to politics, what has captured your fancy? It would be interesting to hear from that audience today, as well as the rest of us who are older. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. In Milwaukee, it is an email that you can send us, which is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. Hello, Michael.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks very much for being with us. Let's get a historical perspective first. Everybody's talking about this huge number of young people who are just drawn to progressive politics in 2008. Have there been other times in American history where there were similar such movements among young people, Michael?
Well, I mean, there definitely have been times when the youth vote has surged in the past. Young people were certainly very active in the late 60s and early 70s. And in 1992, there was a brief surge when Rock the Vote first came on the scene.
Mm-hmm.
But on the whole, the story of young voters in our politics for the last 30 years or so has really been one of decline for the most part. Ever since 1972, when 18-year-olds first had the right to vote in the presidential election, at least, the youth vote has mostly gone down. It blipped up a very, very tiny bit in the 80s when some young people, conservative young people, decided to vote for Ronald Reagan.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1992, it surged when Rock the Vote came on. And I just want to point out that it's not just 2008 in which youth turnout is up. It's been up the past two major elections.
Mm-hmm.
In 2004, youth turnout rose from 40% in 2000 to 49%. That was an additional 4.4 million new young voters or so.
Mm.
And in 2006, the youth vote also went up, and it's the first time the youth vote increased during a midterm election since the 1980s.
Oh, my.
So what we're seeing today in 2008 is really part of a trend that's been building for the last few years.
And, Michael, what are we seeing in 2008? How about the number of young people who have voted in primaries and caucuses so far? Significant increase?
It's absolutely astounding.
Really?
If you had talked to anyone who was involved in youth politics before the primaries started, everyone would have predicted, you know, 15-20% increase in youth turnout, and what we're seeing blows that away. You know, on average, the turnout is double what it's been. In some places, it's been triple. In some places, it's even been quadruple what it was in 2004. So it's really absolutely amazing.
Mm-hmm. You also write in the book, let's just go here for a moment before we go back to 2008, you talk about campuses and Democrats on campuses being organized by Democratic youth organizations, the College Democrats of America, founded in 1932 to help FDR. What happened to organizations like that, and were there many of those for Republicans and Democrats that many years ago?
Well, I mean, the thing about the College Democrats, they have organized on campus. They were thrown out of the party by LBJ for protesting the war, and they've never really been fully funded. as well as much as they should have been by the party. So it's been very difficult for them to do sort of the concerted outreach that we're seeing in the last few years that really works. On the Republican side, they've invested a lot of money in young people. It's not just on campuses. You hear all the time about how, you know, rich donors gave money and started the Heritage Foundation and all of these conservative think tanks. Well, at the same time, when they were doing that, they also invested in organizations like the Young Americas Foundation and the Leadership Institute. And they really created a pipeline for their young people to prosper within the party. And the College Republicans is certainly part of that. Grover Norquist, Karl Rove, these people were part of the College Republicans. They went through that leadership pipeline, and now they are the stars of the conservative movement for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And there really hasn't been that kind of investment on the progressive side to anywhere near the same degree. There's certainly been activism on campuses, for sure, but it's scattered, it's not well-funded, it's not well-coordinated.
Mm-hmm. What got you profoundly interested in politics, Michael?
You said in the beginning I was an accidental activist, and
yeah,
that's really true. I had finished a master's and decided not to go on to a doctorate in graduate school. I was working sort of a dead-end job trying to figure out what I wanted to do when I heard about Howard Dean. And I started going to meetups, and one of my very good friends from high school was getting ready to possibly be shipped to Iraq. He was in the Army.
Mm.
So what Dean said really spoke to me, the way he spoke out against the war. So I started going to meetups and started bringing friends to meetups. And, you know, I was involved in the live music scene at the time and here in New York City. And I thought that the meetups could be a lot cooler. And so did my friends who were coming with me. And, you know, we were going to shows, and it was clear that this was a potential base for Howard Dean that was totally untapped. So we tried to bring the two together. We started a grassroots group called Music for America. We tried to bring artists to the meetups. We tried to bring information about Howard Dean to local shows, and we were fortunate enough to encounter a donor called Andy Rappaport, who was really one of the biggest donors to progressive youth organizations in 2004. We were fortunate enough to meet him and get funding to make our little grassroots project a national organization in 2004.
And tell me more, what are the meetups?
So the meetups were the informal gatherings of Dean's supporters all over the country. You could go to the website, meetup.com, and type in your zip code, say what you were interested in. It could be anything from, you know, a book reading club to politics. And if you typed in Howard Dean, you could find other Dean supporters in your area, find out a place and a time where all of them were gathering, and go and talk about ways to support the campaign locally.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really when the campaign didn't have a lot of money and it wasn't that juggernaut that everyone sort of knew it to be at the end of the election cycle, Meetup was a free, easy way to organize not just young people, but all people at the grassroots level.
Mm-hmm. You talk about the Republicans, conservatives actually being able to fund Republican organizations. Now, it seems as though, from what I've read in your book and elsewhere, that Democrats have also found some pretty wealthy donors to various progressive organizations and causes that really have moved the progressive movement along. It takes some healthy donations at times, doesn't it?
It does, and there have been a few donors who have really stepped up and supported youth organizing in a way that it hasn't been in a long time, to the tune of millions of dollars a year. But it's not it's fantastic that they do it, and they continue to do it, and they're doing it this year. But everyone realizes it's also not necessarily sustainable, that we need to find mid-level donors. We need to find ways to get young people who have huge disposable incomes to spend $10 a month or $15 a month supporting the organizations that represent them in American politics.
And how are they donating now? Can that grow quite a bit? Are they not donating very much?
It's very difficult. There are organizations that are trying different models, getting people to make small-dollar recurring donations on their credit cards, telling college kids, hey, don't buy that one six-pack of beer this month, or, you know, if you buy a $4 coffee every day at Starbucks, why don't you think about, you know, maybe once a week not getting that coffee and giving that money to us instead, because we're here representing you, we're getting progressives elected, and we're making the government be more what you want it to be. Mm-hmm. And it's really something that people are experimenting with still, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And in the next couple of years, we'll see if it's going to actually bear fruit and be something that can support organizations so that they don't have to rely just on the kindness of millionaires.
Right. Well, the Democrats, certainly. The Republicans are doing okay, but the Republicans usually do much better than Democrats when it comes to taking in money. The Barack campaign, Barack Obama particularly going strong, Hillary Clinton gathering tons and tons of money this season. Is some of that due to this shift in young voting and people becoming involved?
I think so. You know, if you talk to the Obama campaign, all these are small dollar donations.
Right.
They don't really keep track of them, so it's not possible to say how much comes from people under 24 or people under 30. But, you know, the amount that people are showing up at these rallies and the excitement that we're seeing among young people, I think that, you know, in part it is due to the surge in youth participation that they're raising so much money. I think we probably do have a lot of small dollar donors that are college students or young professionals in that list, that huge, what is it, a million contributors he had in the last month?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's there. There's no hard statistical proof at this point, but I have to think so. And, you know, I hope it will transfer on to, you know, other forms of involvement, not just his campaign, but to these youth organizations as well in the future.
Right. For those of us who use our computers and use the Internet to gather information, there is a whole world out there that you write about that is so much a part of this, and that's this whole .com, .org, these blogs, these gathering places on the web. Is it primarily a web-based phenomena, would you say, Michael, or not?
It's not. And the analogy I use is, if it is web-based only, what you get is Ron Paul, a lot of online support, but no votes at the polls.
Mm-hmm.
The genius of what's going on, particularly with the Obama campaign, is that they've figured out how to reach people online, young people online, because that's where young people do congregate. That's the new public space for young people that replaces, you know, the mall or wherever young people used to hang out. But they're finding ways to move that offline. They're getting people to come to rallies. They're getting people to convince their neighbors to vote. They're getting young people to actually show up to the polls. So it's not just an online phenomenon. The online is a cheap, easy way for young people to organize themselves, and it's a public space for the campaign to meet young people.
Hmm.
But then all of that does have to move offline for it to be effective.
Right. And tell me what the issues are that are motivating young people. You mentioned you and the war, that was of concern to you. What are the issues now that have young people going to the polls in very large numbers?
You know, for the most part, it's the same issues as everybody else.
Mm.
Rock the Vote did a poll recently. It's the most recent polling of young voters. And they found that the number one concern of young voters overall is the economy. Specifically, it's being able to find a job that's going to let people start a family, you know, buy a house, support children. Closely related to that is healthcare. They know that healthcare is not cheap. Good jobs don't always have healthcare anymore attached to them like they used to. So that's a huge concern for them, not just for their personal health security, but economically as well. Young people are concerned about the war. It used to be the number one concern that they had, but right recently it really has fallen behind healthcare and the economy and jobs.
Mm-hmm. We're going to welcome phone calls for Michael, and we'll take them in just a moment. Feel free to join us at 800-486-8655. Milwaukee callers 414-227-2050. And if you want to send an email, you can talk@WPR.org. talk@WPR.org for you to join our conversation about young people and voting. Our guest is the author of Youth to Power, How Today's Young Voters Are Building Tomorrow's Progressive Majority. A couple lines are open for you. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
I can change the world with my own two hands, make a better place with my own two hands, make a kinder place. Oh, with my own two hands, with my own two hands.
guest this hour is the author of Youth to Power, How Today's Young Voters Are Building Tomorrow's Progressive Majority. Michael Connery is our guest, and we go to your phone calls now and start with Asher from Sheboygan. Hi.
Hi, Kathy, and hi, Michael. This is Asher Heimerman from Sheboygan.
Hello.
Hi.
Well, I guess I'll just start out saying by I think we need to see more youth involved in politics. From my viewpoint, I'm 14, and I don't see that many students in my area active in politics. Like in larger cities in New York, California, Los Angeles, and so forth, you can see a large movement of students, but in smaller cities like Sheboygan and Manitowoc and Two Rivers, you don't see that kind of activity. So I think we need to see more youth involved in politics like I am. And I think the online tools such as MySpace, YouTube, and Facebook are good. And I think there are a few people like myself that have my own website. But how can, you know, I took a look at your website. How can youth use MySpace and YouTube to get active in politics?
Asher, you have to say is somewhat unusual to be that involved at age 14, don't you think, Michael?
You know, maybe.
It's a great sign.
I'm sorry?
It's a great sign.
It is a great sign. And, you know, if you look at all the, you know, large-scale surveys of young people, I think you might find that he's not so, you know, it's not so unique anymore to have someone so young involved in politics. It might be more common than it used to be. But, you know, you're probably right. I'm sure there are places where this youth movement is happening to a lesser degree than in other places. And I mean, I can only tell you, you know, what I did. I went and started something. I, you know, started talking to my friends. We tried to figure out what we could do. And, you know, for us, it was going to the local concert scenes and passing out literature and registering voters. And that, you know, things tend to snowball if you get people involved that way. I think, you're right. Facebook and MySpace are really great tools. If you look at what's happened in the past few months, you had Farouk Olu Aregbe built a list on Facebook that is on par with anything that, you know, a union or an anti-war group could build. And that was valuable. That, you know, that helped the campaign. That helped change the campaign. Students for Barack Obama used Facebook as an event organizing tool and a communications tool for various chapters, and eventually they were throwing 3,000-person rallies. If you want to get into the real nitty-gritty of how Facebook can help you, I'm sure there are colleges in your area. I'm sure the Democratic Party in your area doesn't know anything about, those college students, where they live, what their political leanings are. I'm sure the voter file is atrocious, and they don't walk college precincts because of that. But if you're in a network or you can find someone in the college network, you can find out who on that campus is liberal, who is moderate, who is conservative, who declares themselves apathetic. These are all attributes that Facebook lets you declare and that are publicly searchable. And if you take that and combine it with a campus registry, you know, with a lot of hours of grunt work and data entry, and matching those two up, you can build a voter file that would be a huge asset to your state party or your local party in getting more young people active. Studies show time and time again that the way to increase participation among young people is to actually have a peer, someone who is like them, their age, come and have a face-to-face conversation about it. You know, and the parties are reluctant to, you know, use young people for that purpose and to reach out to young people on campuses in young neighborhoods because all the information that they have is totally wrong for the most part from the voter file. So, you know, if you're looking for a nitty-gritty nuts and bolts thing you can do locally for the progressive movement, that's definitely something to look into. You know, other than that, all I can say is there is a huge lack of organizations working in high schools. And, you know, I'm not in the high school right now. I don't know what the best way to organize young people in high schools are. There really are no best practices for that right now. So I would say talk to your friends and figure out, you know, what's going to be popular with the people around you in your community. What can you do to get them interested? Maybe it is going to be you know, talking to some local bands and throwing a show and, you know, talking about an issue or talking about one of the candidates.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's going to be something, you know, something that's very popular now across the country is called Drinking Liberally, which is a series of drinking clubs. There's about 200 or so of them all over the country. And, you know, once a week people just go to a bar and they meet and they talk about politics. And the candidates start to use that as a place to recruit volunteers, to make pitches. It becomes a valuable piece of community infrastructure for the party and just to get people interested in, you know, knowing what's going on. So maybe there's, you know, obviously you're in high school, drinking is not allowed, but, you know, maybe there's a similar coffee shop thing that you can start in your area.
Mm-hmm. Asher, thanks so much for your call. It's great to hear from you. An email, Jessica from Madison: I'm so proud to be a part of this new politically savvy generation. I'm 24, and I've been involved with politics since before I was able to vote. I see the increase in youth involvement as an awakening in our community. Finally, people are beginning to see at a younger age the importance and the privilege of the vote and the effects that our government has on our everyday lives. Hopefully, this trend will continue in younger generations. What do you think, Michael?
Yeah, I think that's right. You know, it's amazing the amount of activism that we're seeing right now and the amount of participation, not just, you know, not just at the voting booth, which itself is fantastic, but also in volunteering, community service. The millennials are huge participants in their community at that level as well. And I think it's right. You know, this is not a short-term project, and I hope people don't see it as such. Keeping young people involved, we can't say, oh, they voted this year, we did it, we got the young people involved. That doesn't work. There's always more young people. Studies show that if you can get someone to vote for one party 3 elections in a row, chances are that person never crosses party lines again. So if you're in the Democratic Party, if you're in the progressive movement, we need to make this a long-term strategy that happens every year. Because every year there's going to be someone else who it's going to be that election. It's going to be the 3rd election that's going to make them a lifelong progressive. So I think, you know, it's great what we're seeing, but the person is right. This doesn't end soon, and there's a lot more young people coming up. The millennial generation isn't even close to fully participating yet. Some of the millennials are only 12 years old now, and we need to keep working and reach them once they turn 18.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Mike from Rice Lake. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, you almost kind of answered my question a bit about there, what you were saying there about go from being on the internet to going and actually getting the votes out in the polls or whatever. But it's kind of like in parts of it, you know, to get more people involved, and some of it doesn't have to reinvent the wheel again, because it's like, you know, even things like precinct committeemen and whatever like getting involved where you get those voter lists and you get people out there where you can actually show the party that you can produce. And once you show the party that you can produce, they're going to come back to you because you're going to be the people that can deliver votes. And then they're going to listen.
Michael?
I'm sorry. Can you repeat the question? I had difficulty hearing the caller.
Oh, you didn't hear? You want to repeat that? Just a little shorter, Mike?
Okay, sorry about that. When you started your deal there about going from the internet to actually change that rather than being the Ron Paul thing where it was a big splash on the internet, but it didn't deliver the votes. But getting out there to get the votes out there that, you know, like you say, with voter lists and going ahead and accumulating all that you can go ahead and prove to the party that you can deliver votes, and then they're going to come back and listen to you because you're going to actually be out there where you can deliver votes.
Did you get it that time, Michael?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's right, you know. Unfortunately, the party doesn't necessarily believe in, most state parties still really don't believe in young voters. And, you know, this is I'm speaking purely in terms of how they've invested their resources in the last few election cycles. This could very well be changing now that people have seen how Senator Obama has ridden this wave of youth support to victory, well, almost to victory in the primaries. But you're right. I mean, if you can do this stuff, you can go and be a precinct captain. If you can build these voter files, then you can prove to the party that young people are worth the effort and that they are a place that resources need to be invested. And I think that's a lesson that the state parties really all do need to learn and that they're starting to learn.
And thank you very much for the call. What about translating interest in elections and interest in issues to young people running for office? There are still so many elections, more local elections, school boards, et cetera, where a lot of candidates just run unopposed. Are we going to see an increase in the number of young people actually running for office, Michael?
Yeah, I think we are. And, you know, I don't fully have the statistics, but I think to some extent it's already happening. There's a great group that I talk about in my book called the Young Elected Officials Network. And this is a project of People for the American Way. It was started by a young person, Andrew Gillum. He was 22 years old when he was elected to city council in Tallahassee, Florida. And the purpose of the organization is to help young people that either are elected and need to figure out, you know, well, I'm elected, what do I do now? How do I start building a fund for re-election? How do I, you know, get legislation passed? If I'm in the minority party, how do I work there? It's really to create a peer group and a network to answer those types of questions. So, you know, young people are running for office, and there are places they can go to get help. It's not difficult. It's very difficult to run for office, but it's not quite as difficult or insurmountable as people might think. There are a lot of young people that do run for office. The mayor of Pittsburgh is 27 years old. So, you know, if he can be the mayor of one of the biggest cities in America, I think a lot of young people can run for school board, city council, a lot of these lower-level municipal positions.
Michael Connery is our guest. He's the author of Youth to Power, How Today's Young Voters Are Building Tomorrow's Progressive Majority, and we're welcoming phone calls. Our number, 800-486-8655. Lines are open for you right now, 414-227-2050, or send an email if you'd like. That address is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. We go to David from Bayside. Hi, David.
Oh, hi, thanks. Michael, will this so-called progressive youth movement result only in electing more self-proclaimed Democrats who will support Bush style corporate warfare policies overseas, like Senators Lieberman, Clinton, and even Kerry and even Obama, who at one time have endorsed Bush's Iraq war? And just lastly, so far, Michael, you seem to believe that any candidate who calls himself a Democrat is therefore a true progressive. Lastly, to me, a true progressive is someone like Eugene McCarthy, who defeated a corporate warfare Democrat, Lyndon Johnson, in Democratic primaries.
I'm definitely not of the opinion that all Democrats are good Democrats. To a certain extent, I believe that we need to gain a substantial majority, and you know, I'm willing to have some bad Democrats in there to get that majority. But the ultimate goal is, as you say, to elect better progressives. And the millennial generation actually is one of the most progressive generations in a long time on all the issues: healthcare, the war. The environment, they are incredibly progressive. Even the ones that are self-proclaimed conservatives believe things like it's the job of the federal government to provide health care for all citizens. Even the conservatives believe that climate change is real and a threat and something that needs to be dealt with. So, and it's actually the younger you go, the more progressive they get. So, I actually agree with you. It has to be at some point about not just electing Democrats, but electing better Democrats. And my hope is that, you know, on Senator Obama's coattails, or, you know, if it's Hillary on her coattails, that we can elect more better Democrats, and that we can keep this generation engaged so that when the midterms come around, or when we have open seats and off elections, that, you know, we can get someone who matches not just the politics that we want to see, but what actually is the politics of the millennial generation, which is much more progressive.
Thanks very much for the call. Kevin is next from Canton. Hi, Kevin.
Hi. My comment is this: I think the increase in youth participation is due mainly to Barack Obama being racially mixed. I think the old white America is basically over. And I was talking to my father-in-law about this. I look around. I've worked with people from many different races and ethnic backgrounds, and I just see that as normal, whereas people from his generation don't. And I'll take my
drop
here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, you know, I it's definitely a part of it. The millennial generation is the most diverse generation in American history. 40% of the entire generation come from some sort of ethnic minority. And they're the most tolerant generation. They look at Senator Obama, I think, and they see someone who's closer in age to them, but, you know, also does look more like their generation and not like, you know, their grandfather's generation. It's certainly a factor in it. I think his success with young people is a confluence of things. It is his message. It's the hope to change message, getting past the partisan fights. Young people are very pragmatic and don't want to be locked down in these partisan battles that don't get us anywhere anymore. And, you know, on top of that, it's what I've been saying. It's the peer-to-peer outreach. It's meeting people where they congregate, online and offline. All of those things are proven to have an effect, and I think what we're seeing is, you know, sort of a perfect storm of the right candidate saying the right thing, and finally all of us knowing what the right tactics are to get young people out to the polls.
Mm-hmm. And let's talk about youth. How do you define youth, Michael?
There's a couple different measures. Personally, I, in everything that I write, tend to use 18 to 29 years of age. It's particularly a good metric this year because we're fortunate enough that sort of the rough edges of the generations are lining up with how the pollsters break down the demographics.
Mm-hmm.
So 18 to 29-year-olds really are, you know, all millennials. The 29-year-olds today are the first millennials born in 1978. Mm-hmm. Then if you go up to 30 to 44, that's Gen X. You go higher, you get to the boomers and silent generation. And it's not that way for everybody. So when you read a story in the news, you have to be careful because they might be talking about the youth vote, but they might only be talking about 18 to 24-year-olds because sometimes news organizations tend to do that. The campaigns tend to do that if the numbers work out a little better for them than they've been. But for the most part, it's accepted in the polling community and in the youth community that 18 to 29 is the average. It's sort of like the big group. There is one exception, which is the Young Democrats of America, which goes up to 35 years of age. And that's not based on any demographic information. It's based purely on how their membership has been structured since they were founded.
Mm-hmm. And when were they founded?
Oh, you're putting me on the spot. It was a long time ago, towards the beginning of the 20th century, I believe, but I don't have the exact date in my head.
Yeah, but their numbers are increasing as well, or not? The Young Democrats of America.
They are increasing. The Young Democrats of America have really reinvented themselves over the past 4 years. I was a huge skeptic of them originally. In part, one of the reasons I started Music for America was that I didn't feel like the College Democrats or Young Democrats really spoke to me. I didn't feel that they were doing anything that was worthwhile. And, you know, the culture of the organizations really didn't appeal to me. But in 2002, the Young Democrats, both Young and College Democrats, were part of the Democratic National Committee. And the Young Democrats were tired of not having enough budget to do the programs they want and not having the control over their own strategy to decide what those programs would look like. So in 2002, they actually left the Democratic National Committee, and they became a 527 organization.
Hmm.
Just as Music for America found a donor to support it and take it national, the Young Democrats also found a few donors. And in 2003 and 2004, they put together a really amazing field plan that was targeted. It was peer-to-peer. It was only in a few select states, but they partnered with other organizations that reached a broader audience, like the League of Young Voters. They worked with Move On that year. They worked with another group called Punk Voter. And they really changed the entire way the organization operates.
Hmm. We'll have to ask you about Young Republicans, too, and if they're on the rise or not, where that movement is. I know he writes about the progressive movement, but I'm sure he has an indication of how many young people are identifying with the Republican Party as well. Our phone number, we're happy to have you join our conversation, the author of Youth to Power, How Today's Young Voters Are Building Tomorrow's Progressive Majority. Michael Connery is our guest, founder of Music for America, an organization that had great success in getting out youth vote during the 2004 election. He's also been Weekend front page writer at mydd.com, as well as a contributor to techpresident.com and the Huffington Post Off the Bus blog. And he is with us to talk about young people and young people getting organized, young people being organized. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
You changing? Who do you think you're changing? You can't change things. We're all stuck in our ways. It's like trying to clean the ocean. What do you think? You can drain it. Well, it was poison and dry.
Michael Connery is our guest, author of Youth to Power, How Today's Young Voters Are Building Tomorrow's Progressive Majority. We also want to tell you that we have this website, too, for those of you interested in politics, and you are or you wouldn't be listening to us. It's a service of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television. It's the Wisconsin Vote website. It's got candidate profiles and audio of election-related interviews that we've done here on Wisconsin Public Radio, NPR's Election Map, an issues quiz, news headlines and blogs about the election, where to vote, how to register, ID requirements, and all of that. You just go to wisconsinvote.org to get all that information, wisconsinvote.org. Back to phone calls now for Michael and to John from Park Falls. Hi, John.
Good morning, Kathleen.
Hi.
And Michael, welcome to Wisconsin's air. I just wanted to expand this a little bit and talk about the social concerns of young people today, which just fascinate me. I go around the state speaking in high schools primarily as a returned Peace Corps volunteer and also as a member of the Governor's Commission on the United Nations. And I'm fascinated by how much young people are concerned with the world and with the problems out there. Last November, I was invited to the Menasha High School, and I spoke for over an hour to over 900 kids in an auditorium and about the problems in the world, about genocides and about torture and about things like that that I didn't really know if they were going to be concerned about. But they were. They paid attention. They were a great audience, and they afterward came up with intelligent, well-informed, and concerned questions. And I was just thrilled. And I speak to a lot of different schools about issues like that. And to me, that is a revival of the progressive spirit. And I'm just excited to see it happening.
Michael.
Yeah. Young people are, I mean, the issues you cite, Darfur, climate change. If you look at the surveys of young people, they're not the primary concern of young people, but that's really where the activism is, the things that you're identifying. Darfur, human rights, young people are hugely concerned about all these things. If you go onto Facebook, to go back to the online organizing, and you look at, there's a thing called Facebook Causes, which is a little application that lets people raise money, sign petitions, and do all these one-click activism sort of things. And you go to Darfur, and it's one of the causes that's raised the most money on Facebook. Young people are really, you know, they're multilateralists, they're internationalists. They fully believe that, you know, they don't necessarily believe in American exceptionalism anymore. They believe that we are part of a global community and that we all have to work together to get things done. It's a totally new view from what we've had in our politics for a long time, and I agree, it's really exciting.
I know you write about the progressive movement, but what about the conservative movement among young people? Is it strong, Michael?
Well, it's well-funded,
mm-hmm.
and they definitely have, they definitely have strong organizations, but they're not really reaching a broader audience or appealing to a wider audience. Party identification among young people has flipped radically in the last few years. It used to be that, Republicans and Democrats were about even, or the Republicans were ahead a little bit among party ID for young people. And now 48% of young people identify as Democrats versus something like 29 or 33% for Republican. It's really been a radical shift away from the Republican Party. And they know that. I mean, some of them know that at least. You are starting to hear conservative commentators you know, wondering about what about conservative youth. They're remembering the days of Reagan and the first Bush when young people did vote for the Republican candidate. There's a new group out there called the Republican Youth Majority, which, to be honest, I don't know how funded or wide-reaching they are, but they are essentially trying to rebrand the Republican Party for young people. They are pro-life, or I'm sorry, they are pro-choice, they are pro-environment, and they are fiscal conservatives, and those are their three big platform points.
Thanks, John, so much for your call. Ken is next from Albany. Hi, Ken.
I'm wondering, how much did you say young people contribute to money?
I didn't, because for the most part, contributions from young people are very small. They're under $200, which means that the campaigns don't have to report them. So there's no way for the campaigns to even know how many young people are donating to them. What I did say was that young people are, you know, going to all these rallies, particularly for Obama, and he does have this enormous small donor base, a million some odd donors, and I would be very surprised if young people weren't giving. I mean, anecdotally, I've heard stories about young people, you know, donating to Senator Obama as their first political donation ever, but there are no hard numbers at this point. It would be wonderful to know, but unfortunately we don't.
And when do you think we'll be voting with computers?
Voting with computers? You know, I don't know. I'm all for it. You know, we can do our bank transactions by computer, and those are secure. We should be able to figure out how to make voting secure online. I certainly think that for some young people, that would definitely decrease the barriers to participation. For others who, you know, are on the other side of the digital divide, it presents a whole new host of problems. You know, in terms of how far out that is, I don't know. People seem to be very concerned about the security of it, so it doesn't seem like it's that near a thing.
Thanks very much, Ken, for your call. A couple lines open if you'd like to join us. Our guest is Michael Connery. His book is Youth to Power, How Today's Young Voters Are Building Tomorrow's Progressive Majority. 800-486-8655, 227-2050 in Milwaukee. Matthew from Madison is next. Hi, Matthew.
Good morning.
Hello.
Yeah, my comment is basically that I find a lot of the reporting on the radio and on TV that focuses on younger voters seems to seek out the left. I've always been a Republican ever since I've been a young man. I mean, President Reagan was somebody that I always admired. And when I would sit down and look at the issues, I would tend to do a lot of research on them. And when I would talk to my friends who would identify on the left, it seemed there was more passion voters and less research-oriented voters, at least on the young side. Like, as an example, with health care, I find a lot of people saying that everyone should have health care. I said, well, who's going to fund that? And I usually get blank stares, or how are we going to support everyone? And there's blank stares. And then we started talking about the different issues, and it seems like there wants a lot of the younger people in my age group don't tend to want to talk about how we take care of problems more. We want this, and we don't really care how we get there. So I think that on the Republican side, the younger voters tend to be less vocal. I mean, we seek out each other, but we don't tend to get out there and really beat the drum as loud.
Michael.
Well, in terms of the voting issue, I mean, I think what you've identified is a problem not for young people, but for everyone. You know, no one, or at least, you know, 95% of voters out there don't know all the details of the person's plan for every single issue. They know that they have certain values. What maybe it's the role of the government to provide health care and, you know, opportunity for all of its people. And, you know, then they find the candidate that seems to most embody that, and they vote that way. So I don't necessarily think that young people are lower information voters in that particular way than anyone else is. In terms of the young Republicans being quieter, you know, I'm not sure what to say about that. They're really, my experience is the opposite, at least in terms of the very active ones. If you read, if you actually read the manuals, the training manuals that the Young Americas Foundation and the Leadership Institute hand out to young conservatives on campus, they train them to make a ruckus, to be as loud as possible, to spark controversy. I mean, that's why we hear about affirmative action bake sales. That's why we hear about, you know, illegal immigrant hunts in Washington Square Park in New York, because these tactics gain attention and draw more people into a conversation about conservative principles than might normally would on a college campus, which, you know, today, the conventional wisdom is that college campuses are always more conservative, or more progressive. That's certainly true today. I don't know that it was in the past, particularly in the 80s. So, you know, my experience is definitely the opposite. In terms of the media reporting, I think, you know, it's gravitating towards the left because the left is seeing so much more activity than the right is at this point. Young people are participating in the Democratic primary process at a rate of 2-1 over the Republican primary process. And I think the coverage is just reflecting that.
Mm-hmm. You have something else, Matthew?
Well, I was just kind of wondering if the younger population demographic looking for more social programs doesn't tend to feed out of their parents providing, you know, the majority of their support up until they get to, you know, their late 20s, early 30s, where they have to start paying for it themselves.
You mean they're following their parents' political persuasion or their...
Just their parents' support. I think parents, you know, over the 70s and 80s provided a lot more social programs for their children than, you know, maybe they did in the past, you know, in the 50s and 60s. You know, I don't know if that's where the big push for socialized medicine is coming from. I guess I'm really having a hard time wrapping my head around where it's coming from.
All right, Michael?
I think that, you know, for the most part, people see that the market system is failing as a way to provide health care to people. Every other industrialized country has health care, and, you know, young people are concerned about that issue. You know, a lot of young people, their parents can't help them. They're off their parents' health care plan. You know, if you're 21 years old, you're out of school, you're not allowed in your parents' plan for the most part, and chances are you're in an entry-level job that doesn't provide health care because jobs don't provide health care anymore like they used to. And, you know, if you break your leg, on top of having to pay your student loans, you are in serious economic trouble. And I just think, you know, young people can assess their own economic situation in that way. And I think that's why you probably see the push.
Thanks so much for your call, Matthew. John from Kenosha. Hi.
Good morning.
Hi.
Morning. How are you?
All right. How are you?
Good. Good to be talking to you. I wanted to comment on the idea of computerized voting, which is sort of a self-act without, I'm sorry, being there. But for me, it has been 40 years of being able to go to the polls, being with my fellow citizens, and feeling that you're really accomplishing a civic duty.
Yeah, well, you know, what I would say to that is in Oregon, they have mail-in voting. So nobody goes to the polls, and their voter turnout rate is sky high compared to other places. There are tons of barriers to actually physically going to the polls. For young people in particular, you know, we move a lot. We are moving from job to job, apartment to apartment, dorm to dorm, dorm to apartment, you know, sometimes state to state. And we get kicked off the voter rolls all the time. Sometimes if you're in college and the municipality is not friendly to the college, they will actively try to discourage people from voting in their college town, even though the Supreme Court has ruled that a dorm is a legal residence. So, you know, I'm really for anything that's going to make the voting process simpler, even if that does mean that, you know, we don't show up to a physical polling place on that one day.
Mm-hmm. I see your point, John. I love to go vote.
Yeah, it's just I just sort of puff up when I do it. It's really kind of fun.
I am with you.
Yeah, and my neighbors and whatever. At any rate, I get the point,
right.
And that's very good. And the other thing is I belong to a socialized medicine group through the VA, and trust me, it is a comfort to be able to have all of this taken care of and all the stuff that's available. It's just terribly wonderful.
Absolutely.
At any rate, that's my comment.
Thank you, John.
And thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much for the call. So you want to make any predictions of who's going to run against who in the race here, Michael, and whether or not we're going to see just phenomenal youth turnout?
I'm going to say that it's going to be McCain versus Obama.
Mm-hmm.
I think youth turnout is going to be huge. The one surprise might be actually how well McCain does among young people. He's really culturally savvy. He's, you know, been on TV shows like 24. He's been in pop culture movies. He's on The Daily Show all the time, where Jon Stewart gives him a lot of deference. He has a young daughter who is blogging the campaign and doing a really good job of it. And the media loves to report on the children of candidates, particularly when, you know, they are of age to be a real part of the election. And if McCain puts together a decent peer-to-peer field program to reach young people, I don't think he's going to win the youth vote, but I think he might do better than the Republicans have done in the primaries thus far.
Thanks, Michael. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Michael Connery, he's the author of Youth to Power, How Today's Young Voters Are Building Tomorrow's Progressive Majority. He was a co-founder of Music for America, which had great success in getting youth vote out during the 2004 election, although it wasn't as large as everybody wanted. There is a lot of talk that this year it's going to be huge, and it already has been for the primaries and the caucuses. He blogs about progressive youth politics at futuremajority.com, and we thank him for his time. Thanks to Carmen Jackson and Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, and thanks to Rhonda for on-air production here in our Milwaukee studios. News is coming up from National Public Radio, and stay tuned for great conversations ahead. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.